Welcome to Rewrite the Rules, the show about women leaders in Asia. My name is Ritu Mehrish and I interview successful women leaders across Asia to discover how they are rewriting the rules of life, career, and relationships. From these conversations, we will get practical and actionable tips that we can use to accelerate our own career journeys. Don't worry about writing all the points because I will summarize them at the end for you. We will also link the entire transcript in the show notes. Hi, Nicole. Welcome to another episode of our podcast. For our listeners, Nicole is the current president and CEO of Asia Pack, of a big beauty brand, Shiseido. There's anybody who would have missed this name either at the Changi Airport or anywhere else that are traveling. So, Nicole, warm welcome once again. And we would love to hear a little bit about your journey.
Hi, Ritu. Great to be on this. I joined the company actually in October 2020. So that's in the midst of the pandemic. I've steered the company so far throughout through the pandemic and out of the pandemic. So it's coming to 3 years now, and I've got more than 25 years of experience within the beauty industry. So really considered, I think, a beauty industry veteran.
I was also reading that you're the first female regional CEO for the company, and the company has been around for many, many years. Did you always know you'll end up where you are, Nicole?
No, not really. Actually, the answer is it's not really. No, I didn't. So for starters, Shiseido celebrated our 150th anniversary last year. So we are 151 years old. And we have actually within the repertoire of female leaders, quite a lot of leaders in brand team, whether it's in the US or in Japan and so forth. But I'm the only commercial leader and remain so today as head of region. And when I first started, you know, when I first started my career more than 25 years ago, I just knew that my heart was going to be in a place where I feel most passionate about, and that is where the consumer would be. But I never envisioned that, you know, I would be leading an organization and a brand group in this capacity.
Wow. Wow. So tell me, when did the fascination for the beauty industry start with you?
I've always been passionate about beauty, you know, since young. I grew up spending a lot of my pocket money on fashion magazines, and I was always passionate about, you know, learning more about you know, in the beauty world and the fashion world and so on and so forth. And I only realized that this is an industry that potentially I could make a difference when I started my first job. So I started my first job when I graduated with the Gillette Group. And I was working with, of course, FMCG, fast moving consumer goods, for about 2 years. But then at that point in time, having experienced the distribution, the marketing, the branding, was also the point where I realized it was like an aha moment for me, which I felt like I could connect my passion and love for beauty.
And then from there, from Gillette, where did your journey take you?
Yeah, that was the point where actually beauty companies don't hire out of school. And it was actually quite a close industry. People hire from within. So it was difficult to break in. So I did a lot of cold calls, sending out CVs by courier service so that it would land in the right hands. And my CV landed with the L'Oreal Group. With the consumer products division, because I had also started with the FMCG industry. So I was hired into L'Oreal Cosmetics, and that gave me my first break into the industry. And I've remained in the industry since then.
Since then? And where after L'Oreal?
So I was in L'Oreal for a period of time. I joined actually the Body Shop Asia Pacific. That was my first foray into an Asia Pacific role. And then I left for a while due to family reasons back into a local capacity with Lux Asia, which is a regional distributor for perfume and cosmetics. And then I was with the Estee Lauder Group for 15 years, after which I left in 2020 to join Shiseido, where I've been for the last 3 years.
Nice. That, and the reason I was asking, you know, I was interested in knowing your journey because you did say
You made some choices because of family reasons, you know, you also changed jobs. And because it's a podcast about women leaders, and very often women are in that position where, you know, one needs to make some choices, or one makes some choices, you know, given between career and family, or trying to balance both. You did that, and yet you are where you are. So it's not because you make those choices, one cannot reach where they want to reach in their career. And that's such a great point for everybody who's listening, and especially emerging women leaders, or women leaders who are on the rise and who are on that crossroads of thinking between, you know, making choices about their careers and about family and things like that. So thank you so much for highlighting that. Nicole, during this brilliant journey, what were some of the challenges that you faced?
I think challenge is a word that is quite broad, right? So I've come across challenges at work. I've also come across personal challenges. You know, to what you had mentioned earlier, you know, some of the challenges in terms of career choices, you know, determining and deciding what takes precedence and what takes priority at a particular point in time. One of the biggest challenge, personal challenge for me, was when I had to make the decision between leaving a regional job where I was a high flyer, I was performing really well, the company had recognized me for what I did, and I had to make the decision to leave that because I had a newborn baby. I had to learn to rationalize, overcome, and through family support was able to work through the options later on, clarify my goals in terms of what clarify and actually more importantly align with family members in terms of the goals that I will set out, because you're not on your own, you need family support to ensure that, you know, that's supported every step of the way.
This is a really an important topic, you know, because in my own work as as somebody who works very closely with women leaders, I know this comes up so often, especially when women are deciding to start a family, like, oh, if I start a family, will my career take a backseat, or what's going to happen, right? So there's always those crossroads. So, and that's the reason I'm so glad that you're talking about it, that, you know, this was a choice you made, and also you got family members involved. Talk to us a little bit more in terms of what did it take you, one, to garner the support of the family? What kind of goals did you set up?
So first and foremost, there isn't a right time for anything, right? There isn't a right time to have a child. So I always believe that, you know, when things happen, you deal with them. But that was also pretty early on in my career, right? I wasn't left with very much of a choice, to be honest, to have to make this decision, because I didn't really have. And if you dial back more than 21 years ago, the network of support is not as comprehensive as what we have today. A lot of it really resides with the family. So I really had not much of a choice but to make that decision myself, you know, to take that step. But then after taking a step towards where I thought was the right thing to do for myself and my child at that point in time, I realized that I had made myself a not very happy person in terms of the decision I've made. And when you're not very happy person with your the decision that you're making pertaining to your self-actualization goals, then it's hard for you to be happy doing what you're doing at home, you know, supporting the family, supporting the child and things like that. And coming to that rationalization, then I basically had to put on the table to discuss with my husband, you know, and align, you know, basically what the career goals, and align then what compromises we would accept with the new arrangement that we have.
Great. Listen, thank you so much, Nicole. I know it's not always easy to talk about personal stuff, but this is so important that I had to ask you. So thank you for being so honest. Let's move on to the challenges that you were going to talk about from a professional standpoint.
Well, so from a professional standpoint, I've always taken, my next job was always a step up from the job prior, and it could often mean a completely different area. So in my last role before I came here, I actually moved my family to China for 13 years. So I knew the organization, but it was a completely different job from the one I was doing prior to that. I was managing a set of brands prior to that across Asia Pacific. But then moving to China, I had a whole job scope that was changed, I was effectively managing across a portfolio of different brands within a specific geography and taking on a very active commercial leadership position. I effectively moved in, having to set up the organization, but also working with teams that were already there and with people that were already doing certain jobs for a while. So the challenge is always, how do you establish yourself in your new role? You know, coming from something very different before, and how do you continue to add value, motivate your current teams, and ensure that we all grow in the capacity as one team, and fostering that team spirit. And this is very much what I face in my existing job today, because I had pivoted from managing China prior to this job in a business domain or channel called travel retail into a completely different business within the beauty industry, which is managing the domestic market, managing an area, a geography that has all APAC except China and Japan.
So when you moved to China, you had a very different team, different, you know, different scope. How did you work through that? And then when you came back as the regional CEO, how did you work through some of these new changes?
Yeah, so I think the context in China was a little bit different because I had been with the organization at that point for about 10 years. So I had my network within the organization. There was already a framework of trust, a framework of respect that they, you know, that we mutually have. I was just needing to manage the local team in China and making sure that that, you know, I could build that framework of trust within the China team that I was leading. So you know, so it was a little bit different, and making sure that the retailers in China where I had moved to had, can and continue to develop that deep relationship in business that we need to have. So to a certain extent, there's some parallels. But when I moved to Shiseido, I effectively, the challenge was moving out of my comfort zone of a 15-year-old company that I was with prior. So it's coming to a domain and a company for which I had no history. I had to reestablish myself all over again. So I had to dig really deep into my domain knowledge of beauty and begin from there. And to begin from a position of building trust based on domain expertise and what I knew of the industry and the market and the consumer.
Wow. That's so inspiring. You know, there's one word that you said that when you moved to China about that you leveraged on your network, you know, because you already had a well-established network. As per you, what is the importance one of network, and how does one feel comfortable establishing and developing networks?
Yeah, I think that's a great question because I mean, to be honest, Ritu, inherently, I'm an introvert. It is not easy for me, but I think for many of us women, you know, the establishing network within the organization that you've been for a long time, that's not the difficulty. Is when you are trying to establish the out of it with the industry, with partners, you know, in the new organization, that's where the difficulty is. And you really have to push yourself out of your comfort zone. But I think at least within the domain, in corporate roles, within the domain of the organization, putting yourself out there, realizing that you can make a difference to what you say and the influence that you have, and being willing to build that internal network, that's critical. And that was actually one of the main challenge that I had coming into Shiseido without that organization network. So what I had to do was really to tap on colleagues that's been here for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years to help connect me to the right people. And with that connection, it just speeds up that whole process.
The other thing that stood out for me is using your domain knowledge as a quick way to establish relationships or to establish trust, right? Again, I think, and that is something that we can all do, because once we have knowledge, then it's easy to kind of reach out and think to people. So that I guess would be a key takeaway for people. One of the ways to network, or if you're very uncomfortable networking and, you know, making small talks, if you have your domain expertise, domain knowledge, that becomes a great conversation starter or something to have conversation on, right, with people.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why skills are certainly transferable to a certain extent. You know, and you know, when you talk about a brand, for example, in our context of different brands, what really is able to connect me with the different brand holders is not because I've been working on a brand for 5 years or 10 years. It's because I've been in the industry for the last 25 years. And that consumer has evolved, and that consumer is looking at the same things or similar, you know, demands as the industry evolves across different sets of brands. So that's what unites. So there's always a way that you can find a unifying factor.
Nicole, I want to switch gears a bit and tell me, as a woman leader, were there some challenges that are specific to being a woman leader?
Well, in the beauty industry, it is true that you see a lot of women, but as you rise up the ranks, you actually see less and less women because of the demands on our time, just the expectations of the roles women make. It's not that they are less capable, they just make their own decision that this is the choice that they make, you know, towards their life, their family, and their work. You know, within my current organization, of the regional heads that we have, I'm the only female leader. So when you're the only female and in a team of male leaders that's worked together for the last 5 years, 10 years, it's really not easy to break in. And that still remains today. So it's always about trying. You can't over-try, but hopefully certain things that you raise would unify, like the need for the region, go after that. The need for the consumer, go after that. Unify with a common need between the regions. And then that's how we consolidate our voice.
Right. Yeah. Is there anything that, again, in your role, at your position, do you see emerging women leaders or women leaders around you? Is there any advice for emerging women leaders?
Yeah, because I think that women leaders tend to take a lot upon themselves, reflecting back on myself. You know, I think women tend to want to try to solve the problem on their own. They tend to try to do it on their own until they can't do it. And maybe then they throw in the towel and they give up. But actually what they should be doing is to, you know, at right moments, elevate the problems, get people in to help solve the problems, you know, rather than to try to take it upon yourself to try to solve it. I don't think that is because they want to solve it themselves, but rather, you know, it's just this inherent sense of accountability. When I was a much younger manager, you know, when faced with a problem or faced with my own difficulties, in order not to create an inconvenience for the organization, in order not to create an inconvenience for my manager, I would make a decision that inconvenienced myself. When that could have been discussed, and the organization and the company might be happy to accommodate certain things.
Yeah, that's such a good point you made. That's true. That's true. I mean, as you were saying, I was just reflecting on my own journey, but also a lot of women I work with. And it is true to an extent. We just try and solve it. We think if we ask somebody, we might just be disturbing them or being, you know, maybe causing inconvenience for them, right? That's a good point. To what extent do you think organizations play a role in helping women leaders raise their voice or helping, you know, maybe nurturing women talent? What role do you think organizations can play?
I think it's regardless of whether it's female or male, it's about creating a safe environment, you know, where they can feel confident to verbalize, to speak up, to feel that their voice can be heard. So maybe more so for women in certain contexts and certain cultures.
Yeah.
But I think regardless of female or male, really is about having a safe place to be able to vocalize and be authentic.
Nicole, what support system did you tap into? Who are your go-to people for things?
Well, support system, actually, you know, as my kids were growing up, my support system was really made up of my parents. my parent-in-laws, you know, the extensive family support, my helpers, and so on and so forth. But my husband has been a great source of support in sharing the roles to take on parenting roles at home, duties, in being there for the kids when I can't be there, and taking turns because we are both in demanding jobs and we both travel. Yeah, so having that equal share, but as well, I think having a team of colleagues with inherent trust that you work with in the workplace, where you can be open about conversations, in sharing certain thoughts, and in when you have difficulties in articulating different in the difficulties that you have. So I think having a support system, whether it's at home, at work, or maybe with friends.
That's right. Has there been any incident, any story, any anecdote, which as you look back at your career, which you can say was a pivotal moment in your career or a defining moment in your career?
You know, when I was first given a leadership position within my old company to lead a group of brands, you know, entirely coming from a mainly brand marketing background into a position that required me to manage the commercial aspects of it. That was right in the middle of the 2008 financial crisis. So I think those kind of like then defined what I was able to do, you know, and then gave me the confidence to build upon. If I could do this now, I can do this. I can do even bigger things. So, you know, 2008, during financial crisis, I had that opportunity. And then I had to actually pull the brands out from a very difficult situation, because that was the Korean financial crisis that ran into the Asian financial crisis. And then when I moved to China, that was also the point where the biggest brand within the company was having the most difficult time in China. And I actually had to go in with retail partners to brainstorm and look at what we could do to pull the brand back up. And the brand was actually, we pulled it back up to a exponential growth mode. And then I took on this position in 2020, which was in the midst of the pandemic.
Oh, wow. Yes, those seem to be quite pivotal moments. There are two crises, one 2008 and then pandemic, for sure. So you're like a crisis leader. Yeah, anything going wrong, send Nicole there.
No, but I think, Ritu, it's actually when things get wrong, right? And then then companies start to look for change agents.
Yeah.
They become a little bit more daring in who they think. I mean, like, it is the way it is already. They will take a risk with the individuals that they will put in. And if you're up for the risk, that's the best moment to actually seize the opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the operative word there is if you're up for risk, because a lot of time organization may have people in mind, but they also have to be up for it, right?
For the risk,
Right, risk. So that is the other thing that you've done, you know, in your career, is just taking risk and put your hand up. So that's what I'm taking away, is that those are the times you actually, you know, took those risks and you made those decisions. What advice, one piece of advice would you have for the younger women leaders or emerging women leaders?
I would say, don't try to solve everything by yourself. You yourself won't have all the answers. You are fully accountable. Asking for help doesn't reduce your accountability. Asking for help actually shows the ownership that you have over the problem.
That's a great one. Yeah, ask for help. My last question to you would be, if you were to give a piece of advice to a younger Nicole, what would that be?
I think the same advice I would give to an emerging leader, which is don't be afraid to ask for help. I was so afraid to ask for help earlier on, and that's why I walked away from some organizations that I might have thrived if I had stayed for a longer period of time. And also, you know, have some patience. You know, sometimes it takes a while for things to work out. Have some faith, have some patience. Things need time to work itself out. We live in a digital era. Many of our young people grow up as digital natives, but problems are not always digital in nature. They don't just diminish overnight. And you know, some opportunities will take time to crystallize.
Yeah, that's such a great point. Yeah. They do take time, and we just, especially the younger generation today, right? Nicole, anything else that you want to say to our, you know, to our listeners? Anything that we haven't covered before I summarize?
No, I just want to say, you know, with women leaders, you have to believe in yourself and your abilities. You know, don't be too risk averse. You don't have to have 100% confidence to be able to do a job, to go for that job, right? For females, we tend to be more risk averse.
Yes.
But take a calculated risk and have faith in yourself. Have faith that you can deliver. Don't look back. Just look forward.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's a wonderful piece of advice coming from somebody who's scaling the heights and such an inspiration for a lot of us. And so, Nicole, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. And I took away so much from our conversation. And if I were to summarize my top three takeaways, one that really stood out for me was using domain knowledge to build network. You know, and the reason I say that is because a lot of time, this is an area where women leaders kind of say find challenging is building network and how to build network. But actually, if you have build domain knowledge first and use that to build networks, I think that's a really good solution. The other piece that stood out for me was don't try and do everything yourself, like ask for help. And we inherently are not very good at asking for help. And the point that you made was quite nice because you said if you ask for help doesn't mean that you're not accountable. You're still accountable and therefore you're asking for help. So do that more. And the third one is have more patience. Actually, have more patience, but also take more risks. You know, put your hand up for any new assignment. It may stretch you a little bit out of your comfort zone, but it'll be worth it. So those were some of my key takeaways. I'm sure our listeners are going to get so much from this conversation. So thank you once again, Nicole. And keep scaling new heights and all the best.
Thank you for having me, Ritu. Great speaking with you.
Thank you so much for staying with us till the end. If you enjoyed today's conversation, please take a moment to subscribe to the show, rate us 5 stars, and leave a review. It helps others find the show, and that means a lot to us. Thank you for joining us today. This was Ritu with Rewrite the Rules podcast. See you next time.